The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
Now, 30 years ago today, a landmark report was handed down into a royal commission into black deaths in custody. Today, there will be protesters calling for action from all levels of government to address what some are calling a national crisis. The West Australian has today released a special five-part video series investigation into the issue. And joining me now is Indigenous Affairs reporter Rangi Harini. Rangi, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thanks for having me.
And now, this is a major anniversary, but it's nothing that we should be celebrating.
No, the issue of Black Lives Matter or deaths in custody, it came to the forefront for mainstream media or people outside the Aboriginal community and their supporters last June when we had our BLM movement here in Australia. But the issue of stopping black deaths in custody and the concern around Indigenous incarceration has been around for years and decades. One of the big numbers that are coming out over the past week is that since this Royal Commission was handed down 30 years ago, there have been 474 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died in custody. And there were 339 recommendations made to stop them. And it's been 36 months. So there's a lot of numbers, but the main number people should be focusing on is that at least one person every month of Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander descent is dying in custody. And that's an Australian citizen. That's an Australian. We should be caring. And it's a human being. This is fathers, mothers, sisters. These are people that, in some cases, they were preventable. And if recommendations that were made from this Royal Commission were implemented, these people could be alive. There could be many people still alive.
Mm. And you think about the cost on the communities that where these people come from. It reaches far beyond individual cases. And now, what was the incident or series of incidents that launched the Royal Commission in the first place?
Yeah, so what we will look into in the first part is what started the Royal Commission and what had happened. And what it was the death of a teenager, a 16-year-old who a community said was going to be the leader, and his name was John Pat. It's a story many people know, but that's a story that people in the Aboriginal community may know. And it's an incident that happened in Roeburn, which it's a small little town up in the state's northwest. And no one was ever committed. No one was ever convicted over that crime. And people were outraged. This is a teenager who got into a physical altercation with police officers, people who were meant to serve and protect. And he was found dead in their cells. No one was ever held accountable. The community went through so much trauma. They had to really dig themselves out of where they were to change the narrative of what was being written about them in order to have a better future for their younger generation. And that's what happens in a lot of small towns, in a lot of these small communities where a black death happens, is you have this, what someone, one of the nieces said, is this fog around you where you can't get rid of that. And it really comes down to the individuals and community leaders and elders to say, we are not going to let this determine our future and we are going to turn it around. But there should also be government support in that as well.
Now, this is an incredible series that you've produced. It's heart-wrenching to watch for anybody. You've been investigating it for several months, spoken to families that have been involved, that have lost loved ones. How has it been for you personally as an Indigenous woman and as a journalist?
Well, I'm actually Indjibarndi, which is the group that John Pat is a part of. I also grew up in Port Hedland, which is where Miss Stu died. Miss Stu is a distant family member of mine. Her auntie, which is her Nana's sister, helped raise me and was working at the daycare that my mum used to own in Port Hedland. So I feel very connected just off those elements. But I also know in any of these cases, whether it was Miss Drew, whether it was John Pat, whether it was Mr. Ward, this could have easily been a family member. So knowing that there were cases where race, my race, being Aboriginal, played a factor in the life or death of these people, especially in situations where their skin colour was only looked at and not medical conditions were looked at, that plays a big element of wanting to get justice, but also wanting the community to know that as much as it's hard to face, racism has played factors and is a factor in Australia when it comes to the treatment of minority groups such as Aboriginal people.
And we know that's the case with the justice system. We know it's the case with the health system where there are poor outcomes and the determining factor is purely the colour of a person's skin. It beggars belief when it comes to the justice system, that you could have a royal commission, cost millions of dollars, and come up with these recommendations, yet so little has changed. What are some of the recommendations that have been adopted, the some that haven't been adopted, and what do you think the key is moving forward?
I think the key moving forward is we need to get recommendations and policy changes before people die. What we have seen in some of the most significant cases where an offence was an offence that a white person would have committed and changes were only made after an Aboriginal woman has died is deaths like that of Auntie Tanya Day over in Victoria. She was arrested for being drunk in public. Now you think of the Melbourne Cup and how many people are drunk in public after the Melbourne Cup and catch a train. How many of those people end up dead in a prison cell or in a police lockup? Not many, but it took the death of a 55-year-old mother and grandmother in order for Victoria to make those changes of being drunk in public, that how many of us have committed that crime? Miss Drew, here in Western Australia, they only changed the fine default laws after she died. This was something that covered two recommendations and they waited until she died, and she was born the same year these recommendations were handed down. It shouldn't be taking lives to save lives. It should just be a matter of we have the blueprint, the Royal Commission recommendations. We've got the determination. We've had 447 black deaths. We need to stop that. Let's just get on with the job. It should be simple, but it just seems like it's being complicated at the top level.
Well, and you make a very good point here that so much of this is simple. This is not based on things that we don't know. This is based on evidence that has been gathered over decades, not just from the Royal Commission, but in the years that have followed. There are so many things that are difficult to fix, but stopping Indigenous people from dying in custody, there are some simple things that we can do today. So this protest that will happen, what do you expect to see from that protest, and how would you describe the mood of the protesters?
I will say, I would say people are probably angry. It's the 30 years is today. So emotions are high. I've heard there may be family members of those who are part of this 474 number. So you can expect frustration and anger. But I think there is also going to be a sense of hope that we are at the boiling point. Enough is enough. We've had the huge momentum and move last year, that we've seen that with Australia Day, the Invasion Day protest this year, the biggest turnout in Perth history so far. I would say there's frustration, but there's also hope in moving forward. And at this point, are we going to have to get to 500? Like, I hope that's not the case. But we're almost there, and that's not good enough.
Do you think Indigenous West Australians see Premier Mark McGowan as an ally or a roadblock?
I think they've seen him as both of them. I think no tea, no shade, so no offence to Colin Barnett, but it was very easy to come across as the hero in that case because of some of the things that he had done during his time in office, like the threat to close remote communities, like the things that he had done with the James Price Point. There was a lot that he had done that it was very easy to come in and look good. And his government,
dare I say, look like a white saviour.
Yeah, and his government is trying. You've got John Quigley, who was the police union lawyer in the John Pat case. He was on quote-unquote the bad side, and now he's the person who's making these changes and even said that Miss Drew was the catalyst for change for the fine default laws. But I think it's just a matter of, okay, you've had these 4 years, you've done some changes, but now you've got all this power in Parliament. It should be the time where they can be making these changes without having that buck from the other side. It should be easy now than ever.
Well, people can read your special series at thewest.com.au, and there is also an incredibly powerful 5-part video series which listeners can watch at thewest.com.au. Indigenous Affairs reporter Rangi Hirini, thanks for being on The West Live today.
Thanks for having me.